Okay, we've got Nathan Birch on the line. Can you hear me there, Nathan?
Yep, all good.
Fantastic. So pleased to have you on the Long Property Show. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well, yourself?
Very well, thanks. Very well, too. So so thrilled that we've got you on the Long Property Show. I've been meaning to do this for some time. Just for the audience, Nathan, maybe just can you kick off and tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your company, Be Invested?
Yeah, sure. So 31 years old, got a few grey hairs nowadays, and first started investing and buying my first property in Western Sydney at the age of 18. Made my first $1 million in Western Sydney when I was 21. Retired from the workforce at the age of 24. At the age of 31, I don't even know how many properties exactly. It's over 200 that I own currently. In the process of doing some other sort of investing right at this point in time, still very active in the marketplace, have over $50 million worth of property invested at this point in time, and only about $20 million worth of debt. So, you know, pretty decent for a guy that failed every grade from kindergarten to at school.
All right. Just stop there for a sec, Nathan. You've touched on a couple of points there that I think deserve a little bit more rigor. So, I mean, look, most people just, you know, they get started, they buy one or two properties, and that does them. You look at the statistics, you know, I don't think there's more than maybe 1% of the country that owns more than, say, 5 or 6 investment properties. You've got over 200. So when you got started, did you have any idea that it would unravel this way? I mean, you're obviously a driven kind of guy, but, I mean, could you have possibly dreamt that it's become this big?
Look, I knew what I wanted to do, and you know, I was willing to do whatever it takes to get there. And I think, you know, a lot of people in life want to be successful, but they're not willing to do what it takes to be successful. There's a big difference. You know, like a lot of times people think that, you know, Nathan must have a cool lifestyle where he, you know, goes out and parties every day. But if I was out partying every day, then I wouldn't be where I am, because it takes a level of commitment and dedication and focus to be able to push, you know, through those next levels. And you know, it's from when I first started investing, I grew up in a blue-collar family. I wasn't poor, but I wasn't well off. My family, you know, pretty, you know, average and struggle to get by still to this day, and I try and help out where I can. But, you know, I didn't want to be in a position where, you know, I had to go and work for someone I hated or whatever the case might be. I wanted to be able to live life on my terms. And, you know, I realized that a lot of people are the age of 30 or 40 or 50 and they have to work two jobs and they're struggling to get by and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I realized that if I could sacrifice years where I was, you know, lean on my expenses and stuff like that, I'm still not married, I still don't have children, but, you know, I see people when they have kids and all those sort of commitments that we get in life that, you know, it's harder to get ahead. So I thought if I could dedicate 10 years between the age of 20 and 30, I wanted to buy property when I was 13, I bought my first one at 18, and I thought if I could dedicate up until the age of 30 to be able to hustle so hard and never have to work a day in my life again, then that was cool. And I didn't know exactly how I'd get there. I didn't have any mentors or anything like that. I just knew what I wanted and, you know, knew what I didn't want in life and thought, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to get to where I want to be. And, you know, I still think that, you know, I'm probably only less than 5% of where I want to be when I die. So, you know, there's a lot
of... Love
it.
I love it. So it's just the beginning for you.
Exactly.
Fantastic. I mean, so just on that, I mean, where do you anticipate things going from here? You've achieved a huge amount to date. If you kind of fast forward 5 or 10 years, what are your thoughts?
I made the call at the start of this year that I'd be a billionaire by the age of 40, and I actually... you know, the more that I think about it, it's not $1 billion in net worth. I reckon I can build $1 billion in passive income per annum. And that, you know, I'm just going to say $1 billion. I want to have $1 billion to my name, and I'll, you know, come back and, you know, prove all the haters wrong out there in the future.
But, I love it. Shoot for the stars and see where it gets at you. If you're on that kind of trajectory, I'm sure good things happen.
I'll shoot for the moon and I'll end up at Kepler 8764 or whatever. But, for those of you that don't understand what that is, that's like a new planet that's so far out of our galaxy that we don't know what it is. But
I love it. So you obviously started very young. I mean, I'd imagine, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'd imagine you're working a couple of jobs. You're saving as much as you can for an initial deposit. You buy your first home, maybe you buy your first couple of homes. And then from that point forward, has it been very reliant on the kind of capital growth of these assets, which has given you some equity to reinvest? And then has that generally been the theme that's allowed you to go from strength to strength throughout this kind of acquisitive phase of your investment journey?
Look, it did. You know, I wasn't afraid of hard work because I knew that if I didn't do something to change my life, I'd be doing hard work for the rest of my life. And, you know, it was a hustle. I was working two full-time jobs. I was doing, you know, 100-hour weeks and all that sort of stuff. I remember one year, I think it was the year I turned 21, apart from renovating properties and doing what I had to do with properties that I'd bought, I also was working two full-time jobs. I was working, I had 7 days off in the whole year. I was working 20-hour days a lot of the time. And that was what I needed to do, and I didn't know any better. Like, obviously nowadays with my grey hair and all, I am a bit smarter and wiser, and I can do things more strategically. But you know, it's what I had to do to get the ball rolling. And I devised a plan. I wanted to have 10 properties by the age of 30. I thought it was impossible, but I thought I'd just go and hustle anyway and do what I needed to do. And at the time I was 25, I had 25 properties, and you know, it sort of went from there. And every 3 months, I feel that I evolve and develop into the next phase of my life. You know, like a little baby will grow, and every 3 months, it can learn how to talk and crawl and stand up and whatever. And you know, it's nowadays I have fun with it. You know, like I run an organisation. I've over 15 different brands that I've built from scratch, ranging from an investment firm with buyer's agency. Real estate offices nationally, be it my building company, be it my advisory firm that we've got here, be it the law firm, whether it's accountancy, you know, every angle of the real estate market and property industry. You know, I've tried to refine and make better than what it was. I focus heavily on the people. The people are what creates. You know, you're only as good as the people that are around you. And
interesting. So just so I understand that. If I'm an average Joe and I'm thinking about investing in property, and obviously I've come across your name and some of the things that you do, we get in contact. Yep. You're saying that it's basically through your series of brands, it's the full gamut of what any property investor might need. That you can offer, be it from the buyer's advocates finding the right property, maybe I don't know, but there's some kind of financing arm that can organise the mortgage. It sounds like there's your property lawyers, etc., to do contracts. Is that it?
Yeah. So when I first started the business, being invested, what was that I'd quit my job, had nothing to do. I wanted to help other people. I was 25 years old, so I had an ego. And when the media got behind me, I was like, you know, this is pretty cool. You know, I feel like a rock star. But keeping grounded is the very important thing. And what I realized is I started making YouTube videos and stuff like that. I became a bit of a internet celebrity on that platform of YouTube. And not as big as Justin Bieber. But basically, I started making videos, people wanted my help. I started helping people with an education part of the business. From that, I was getting requests to help people from a buyer's agency service because I think my greatest skill is negotiating deals. From the buyer's agency, I realized that some of the services around me weren't as best as what I thought they could be. And the people that I found in the industry over the years that were the best, I wanted to be able to, you know, work with those people in a more closer capacity. So that's what, you know, slowly established different businesses where I've been able to, you know, help those guys fulfill their career journeys by, you know, managing certain businesses or whatever and being in a more advanced role and being able to help them flourish but also deliver the results of what our clients obviously need at the end of the day. And that's, you know, it's been a humbling sort of experience. So I sit here in my office. I'm in my first office. It had no windows, no, you know, it had five people in a 10 square meter office. And now I've got, I think, over 100 staff. I don't know how many staff I've got in total. I've got my feet up at my desk wearing a pair of thongs because I like to have fun with what I do. And it's not because I do it because I want to make a buck. And that's the big difference between, you know, if you do something with a purpose and a passion, that will show in the results as well. And,
really interesting. Really interesting. You sound a lot like, I don't know if you know this guy, Ruslan Kogan. Do you know Ruslan at all? Or have you...
Yeah, I've heard of him and know him a little bit, but not, yeah.
I feel like you're the Ruslan Kogan of the property investment world. Just like young guy, big vision, lots of energy, and just willing to kind of buck the trend to create something new and different that hasn't existed before, and basically improve on the status quo and with a whatever it takes kind of mentality. And
yeah.
It's very inspiring, so I love it. Tell me, let's get on to some of the property specifics, Nathan, if we can. I'm particularly interested in that. So you just mentioned there earlier that you think one of your best strengths is negotiating deals.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of relates well to your overarching theory around investing in property well, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but is you're specifically looking to buy undervalued assets, and you're looking for ideally positive cash flow properties that do also have capital growth drivers and potential. Is that a decent summary?
It is. Sometimes when we get clients that come to our office and we help them out, they sit there and say, I want to buy a property that's positive cash flow. And I always cringe when I hear the word positive cash flow, because I like good cash flow. I like positive cash flow. I like all those things. But once again, as I said beforehand, you know, a lot of people want to be successful until it comes down to what it takes to be successful. And
right.
A lot of people want to get rich quick and all that sort of stuff. You know, I talk about my head full of grey hairs. I didn't have them when I first started. I had a face full of pimples. And that's because I push myself to the extremes. I know what it takes to get to where you want to be. I know what you need to do. And a lot of people's expectations is, I want that. How can I get that? And yes, all that I need is positive cash flow. It's not. You need to have a balance of cash flow, growth, equity. You know, everything comes into the picture. So there's three things that I look at with buying any property. It needs to be below market value. It needs to have upside for capital growth. And needs to have a good cash flow. So the reason below market value is if the market tanks, you want to make sure you've built a buffer in from the start. You want to make sure that you've got access to be able to pull that equity out if you want and redeploy it in the next deal, because it's a leverage. Work smarter, not harder. You want to make sure that you've got upside for growth, because you want to buy that property for 200 grand and look back in 5 years' time and see it at 400 grand. You want to see it double. And I'll talk about my strategy after I talk about these 3 points.
Sure.
When I first started, it's evolved over the years. And the third point, obviously, with the cash flow, I'm happy with neutral cash flow. I don't want it to. I'm not buying a property to get a $200 a week negative cash flow on it. I do buy negative cash flow properties. My highestly negatively geared property today would be $50,000 per annum. And I think I've got about a half dozen of them. I don't buy them because they're negative cash flow. I buy them because they fit in line with my strategy today. And that's what a lot of people don't realise. The importance of building a sustainable property portfolio is by having the foundations laid. Foundation, a bread and butter property in a capital city, an entry point. For example, for me, it was buying properties in Sydney at 150 grand a piece going back 10 years ago, 12 years ago, that were worth 200 grand, that were renting for 250 bucks a week, and seeing them go up. Those properties that I own are worth 400, 450 now. They rent out for 400, 350 a week, and I own next to nothing on them. Some of them I've pulled a bit of equity out of and redeployed, but I have them for a purpose. And, you know, if you just had, you know, 10 properties, we got from 200 grand to 400 grand, you sell off half of them, you pay it your debt, you've got five properties unencumbered, they're rent for 300 bucks a week, that's 1,500 bucks a week, 75 grand a year, happy days, right? That's just the basic strategy. But what comes after that? Once you've laid your foundations, what about if you go and pull out some of your equity and use that equity to go buy a block of land, build a house on it, sell it off, make yourself a quarter of $1 million, pay out one or two of those loans? You know, is it, what's the next level? And what's the next level after that? You know, I've invested in, you know, I've got shopping centres. I'm setting up a shopping centre this week, another one. I've got motels. I've got unit blocks. I've got land that I've built houses on. I've got my original properties, which are in Sydney, which are, you know, little houses and units and townhouses and villas and stuff, which do their thing. What I'm etching into at the moment, and I'm not saying it because it's a good thing, I think developing is very risky, but I think it'd be rewarding. And when I talk about those properties that are heavily negative geared, you know, 50 grand a year or whatever, you know, I'm buying them because I've already got, you know, $500,000 a year passive income. What's 50 grand negative out of that? I'm not going to notice it. It's not, you know, unless I'm going to, you know, whatever. It's not like I'm going to miss out on that. But the fact is that buying a property for $1.5 million, spending $2 million on civil works on it, so I'm into it for $3 million, $3.5 million, building 40 houses on it for, you know, cheap money, so I'm into a project for 12, 15 mil that's worth 100 mil, you know, it's a pretty decent sort of return. So
yep.
I'm happy to play around with the cash flow. But it depends. You know, you can't do that overnight. Like, I'm just entering that realm now. I don't have to go get my money from, you know, different sources. I'm not putting myself at high risk. I'm just building it organically and sustainably and being aggressive with my own parameters.
Yeah, interesting. So it sounds like you're extremely well diversified within the kind of real estate space. You don't have many investments outside of, well, I don't know if you do, but regardless of that,
I didn't start with other investments. I've collected stuff over the years. I've got millions of dollars worth of cars that sit in my basement. Now I've got the group of companies, which is obviously worth a lot of money. Those sorts of things. But I don't talk about them as being, that's not, you know, that wasn't how it started. I made my money from working hard, buying properties and renting them out. And that's the fundamentals, you know. I look at my property side of my life and my properties feed off each other. In my business world, my businesses grow organically within the business level, and those sorts of things from there. So still to this day, I bought my dream house where I want to live. I've got, you know, a very large estate type property that I've bought. Always said that I wouldn't settle for any home in the middle until I get my dream home. I'd rather live in a caravan until I get my dream home.
And fantastic. So you've been renting up until recently, is that right? And now you've got the dream house that you live in that you own?
I stayed at home as long as I could.
Yep.
But I didn't have to have overhead. That helped a bit. I paid board, I paid my mum's council rates and water rates and stuff like that to help her out and stuff. It wasn't like I was getting free ride. But no, which obviously trying to have a delayed gratification, I could have gone out there and bought a nice little cozy family home, which is a red brick house or a new four-bedroom, two-car garage, two-living area home. But that wasn't what I wanted to live in. That was my end goal. I wanted bigger than that. So I did rent for a period of time. I bought my dream home probably about 3 years ago. The house that I live in at the moment sits on the site of where my dream home is going. I haven't built my dream house yet.
Right.
I'm waiting for council to approve my plans. That's a 2,200 square metre mansion as the main residence, and plus there's a lot of out buildings and ancillary buildings to accommodate with that. But my house that I live in is, you know, it's salmon colour paint on the walls and, you know, crappy old carpet. And I'm, you know, I try to be humble because I'm just pushing forward, you know. It's still, you know, I see there's a better goal at the end of the day, and it's a general progression to, you know, what I would consider as a worthy ideal for me. So
fantastic. So Nathan, tell us, buying properties that are below market value sounds amazing in theory. Everyone wants to do it. We know that there are, you know, motivated sellers at times, be it through divorce and deaths in families and various other things. How do you go about finding properties where perhaps there are motivated vendors, and where, how do you go about buying properties that are below market value?
Understanding the market. So if we go back to 1997, you'll watch a movie called The Matrix, and you'll see this guy called Neo, who knows nothing about this real world that's out there, and he discovers that the world that he sees around him is fake, and then he programs himself to understand how to work in the world that we've got. And for me, it's a matter of understanding what the properties are doing, what the markets are doing, what the motivations of people are, and, you know, being able to be the best. You know, at the end of the show, you end up dropping bullets with your hands. You know, I often try doing that in real life, and I don't test to, but at the end of the day, the, you know, understanding the market and being able to read the market like that is ultimately the key. It started off with, you know, 8 hours a day searching realestate.com. It was even before realestate.com, because it didn't even exist going back in, or did exist, but it's not in its capacity today. But when I was 18 in 2002, 2003, the internet wasn't a big thing. You had to go on physically, you used to go pick up the magazines and go and talk to the real estate agents. It would take a couple of days to get on the market. You wouldn't be able to see what's happening in another area. So a lot of, you know, groundwork and losing the soles of my shoe on the footpath by knocking on doors and trying to find opportunities. And I guess over the years, building up those relationships, understanding the market. Nowadays, it's very different for me. The agents will call me. They know what I need. They know that, you know, I know how to make the agents work for me, sort of thing. So it's a bit different. And that's why I get things in bulk. And, you know, the deals that I get are, you know, people always go, how do you get those deals? You know, the agents, when I've got power when it comes to the agents, I can, you know, make calls to them and, you know, mate, you're not going to sell it, it's coming to me. And they're like, okay, we'll sell it to you. So that's something that's grown over time. It just doesn't come overnight. But I think it's important that people identify, what first of all, what their goals are. So where are you today? Mm-hmm. Where are you going to be in the future? And what you need to do in the meanwhile to get from where you are to where you want to be, and draw a roadmap up. So what type of properties do you need to acquire? Because at different times you need equity, sometimes you need cash flow, sometimes you need a combination of both. And it's important to make sure you're buying the right properties at the right time. I see so many people, they stuff up their investing journey because they don't have the right strategy in place, and they don't know what they need next. They might need equity to get themselves the next one. They might need cash flow to be able to service. And it's important to work out what you need to get to where you want to be. But besides that, once you're, you know what you need, go and find what you need and that sort of market, and become an expert at that market. You don't need to know every single... People talk to me about, you know, the Melbourne market. People talk to me about Queensland. People talk to me about Sydney. People talk to me about Perth. I like the Eastern Seaboard. That's where all the action is. So that's why I stick over here. I don't go and speculate in mining towns. I don't go and speculate in the back of Perth. I don't go and speculate in Northern Territory. I ain't going to speculate in Tasmania. I like the three key states on the eastern seaboard. Sydney, obviously, is the doormat to the country. We need immigration, so it's not going to stop anytime soon. We're blessed that we're a young country, so we need to bring people in, but we don't have enough dwellings for them. And I think we've got a shortage here in Sydney. If we look at Melbourne, there's too much construction and not enough people for what you guys are constructing there. And if we look at the Gold Coast, the growth, you know, it's the highest growing population state in the country. So with it, I look at the key areas and work out what sort of price range do I need to be at. So
how often are you actually reviewing your portfolio and revising your plan? And who are some of your key people that you kind of do that together with? Who do you rely on?
For me, I do it all myself. I try and do everything I can myself. I'll get my property managers to execute rental increases or whatever. I actually went through my portfolio on the weekend and decided to sell off half dozen key assets, like good assets I've spoken about over the years, just because I want to bring up some capital so I can pump it into some other investing in properties. But I review that on a quarterly basis. Every New Year's, Christmas, New Year's period, I'll spend like a week, 10 days, just lock myself in a room, you know, try and get my brain at a point where it's at a capacity of thinking, okay, where is my 2016, 2017, where is that, whatever year it is, where is that going to be? What actions do I need to take this year? And how am I going to execute my year in line with my goals? And then as soon as I solidify that in my head, I park it to the side and go, I'm going to pull the trigger, I'm going to go do what I need to do. And, you know, all the little things will stand by, you know, like the commitment and the sacrifice, if you want to get too aggressive, yeah, things do follow the commitment. You know, like things do, there is the sacrifice, I mean, that you need to make along the way, whether it be your comfort zone being sacrificed, whether it be, you know, the weekend that you need to go out and look at a property or a weekday and you have to, you know, not go out and eat your dinner. You know, we were talking beforehand about when I first got on the line with you that I haven't even had lunch yet and it's late in the evening.
Got it.
I review it quarterly.
Really interesting. So, Nathan, for somebody that's you know, a lot earlier in their investment journey, and therefore, you know, they may be most reliant on capital growth to just build some equity that they can, you know, that then just gives them some opportunities to move forward. What are some kind of entry level investments that are very much growth orientated that come to mind for you today in 2016 that our audience might you know, benefit from doing some further research on?
Gold Coast and Brisbane, you can pick up properties there, $200,000, rent for $300 a week. You know, two-bedroom units, two-bedroom townhouses, three-bedroom townhouses, those sort of things. Sydney, there's some opportunities, some very big opportunities to pick up. This is probably for more principal place residents or whatever, or to, if you're at the tail end of your portfolio and you want to pay down some debt, to make some quick cash, buy a block of land, build a house on it, sell it off, make a profit. You know, I've been, a lot of my investors that I helped out years ago in Sydney when they bought it, $200,000, and now they're worth $500,000. You know, I think Sydney has gone up a lot, and it's harder to do that in Sydney. What I did for myself and my client, you can still do it in other states. I think the opportunities out there very much so. But I think for people to pay down those debts on those properties and be able to, you know, consolidate their portfolio and exit the workforce, you know, using their equity to buy blocks of land where, you know, people want a house. People don't see the vision of the future. So most people want to buy like a house already built. You can buy a block of land, build a house on it cheap. And I've seen a lot of investors making like $250,000 to $500,000 just by buying the land cheap, building cheap, and having a product at the market, which is at the emotional sort of level. So there's opportunities at the top end, the bottom end, the middle end. I have bought properties in regional areas beforehand. A lot of people go, you know, whether they've read a Steve McKnight book, 0 to 130 properties in 3.5 years or whatever. You know, those little dream worlds that people have, those properties don't exist. And if they do exist, you know, there's a lot of admin at the back end. You know, like the properties in regional areas I've found haven't had as great as growth. If they do have good growth, it's normally unsustainable sort of growth, and they're more sporadic. That's why I like to stick towards capital city type of properties. You can buy properties in Australia for as little as $20,000 out there in 2016, but is that what you need? I don't know. Everyone's position is different. But it's important. I think it's important for everyone to have a plan to know, you know, where are they at, what do they need to do, and where is they going to be at. And, you know, once you know where you are, once you know where you want to be, it's easy to devise a plan. And I think, you know, the biggest thing I see with investors, probably 80-90% of them that come into our office have been invested, come in thinking they know everything, walk out going, shit, I didn't know as much as I knew. And I'm glad that I had a reality check, because You know, there's a lot of people out there with information, whether it be buy a house and put a granny flat on it. You know, I think this is the stupidest strategy in the country at the moment.
Is that just because the costs associated with building the granny flat, like that money could be deployed in other investments? Is that where you're going with that being a bad idea?
Well, a couple of things. First one is that you're devaluing your property, but you're overcapitalising at the same time. You're putting your property as a risky investment because you're making it so only a small segment of the market want it, and it won't go up because you're tying it to a yield base and not to an emotional base. So the house, like just a normal house, would have like mums and dads and everyone wanting to buy and has a good chance of going up. I'd see a lot of people, you know, do their backside on buying these things. They pay a premium for it. You know, you could. The other day I talked to people and they're like, oh, I'm buying a house in Greenfield, it's good, a good return, but have you worked out the numbers on it? They're like, yeah, it's a good return, but have you worked out exactly how much you're going to spend on it? And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to pay this much. What about when you add this? What about when you add that? For that opportunity cost, you can go buy something far greater. And they're like, oh, you know, yeah. It's a touted thing out there, but I don't see people getting rich by buying a house and renting flat. They might get to one or two. There's a difference between people being one or two properties or 10 and 20.
Really interesting. Tell me, we're running out of time, Nathan, so we can we'll finish up in a sec. But there's just a couple of burning questions that I've still got for you. You mentioned the word hustle a number of times at the start of this interview. Tell me a little bit more about what that actually means in the context of a property investor and entering this game as an investor. What does it mean to hustle and how does that help investors invest well?
Yeah. I see investors that come through our office that from the buyer's agency side of thing, if I had a job in my business, it would be help my investors build their portfolio and acquire the properties for them. But right. When I speak to my clients, I look at the ones that are very successful, the ones that are just average, and the ones that, you know, they get ahead, but they're not working at the capacity. And I sometimes need to shake them. I'm very candid with what I work with people because we need to be on the same page. Otherwise, it's not going to be, you know, I don't want to put my name into it. So it's when I look at them and the difference between the two lives is that some people just go, oh, it's outside my comfort zone, or oh, she'll be right, or they'll be concerned about, you know, they'll be making excuses for themselves, really. I've seen people that will go and get a second job. I've seen people that will sell off their car. I've seen people that will do what it takes to get themselves to where they want to be. And it's that commitment. You know, Christmas is coming up. I had this conversation in my office recently. Christmas is coming up in a couple of months, and you know most people are going to go and plan more for what they're going to do for Christmas, what they're going to buy clothes for, who they're going to buy toys for, whatever the case may be. You're going to spend more time at that than planning what they're going to do for their own financial future. And side to that is that I find this time of the year is the best time of the year to be buying because everyone else is stuffing their turkey where people need to sell their property and, you know, there's an opportunity for you to go out in the market and close those bills right now. And, you know, people in general don't want to do that hard work. They go, oh, wait, I'm going to go out on the weekend or I'm going to go and do this. And it's like, well, you know, if you want to be here and you know what you need to do, go out and do it. Like, it ain't easy. Building a large property portfolio, being successful, isn't easy by the slightest stretch of the imagination, but it's being committed and turning up and pushing through those shit days to get the better days ahead.
And just getting it done. Again, it's something that I hear Ruslan Kogan say all the time. You know, have a plan and then just do it. You know, so there's definitely some overlap there. Just lastly, then Nathan, you know, I obviously you're all about hard work. You've got a plan, and you'll do whatever it takes relentlessly to achieve that. And the same goes for the clients that you're assisting. I feel like you're a deal maker. You hunt down great deals, you buy them well, and that ultimately sets up your assets for future growth and success. Is there a particular deal or investment that comes to mind that's particularly memorable for you? It stands out in some particular way because it worked out tremendously well, or you learned something from it that's just really stood the test of time and has kind of guided the way that you now just, you know, think about investments and continue to invest.
All of them.
What do you mean by that? So you're saying you learn something from each one, and because you apply yourself, you know, as hard as you do each time around, that they all kind of have some kind of impact. Is that what you mean?
What you're doing today will guide your future. So looking at from my first property, I bought a house, put a granny flat on it. It was the only house I ever put a granny flat on. I thought that it was a great strategy as well. It was the biggest nightmare. I then thought house and land was meant to be good. So I bought my first few properties, which were house and land, and I realised that it was going to hurt my growth. So then I started buying units, townhouses and whatnot. I've had fantastic growth out of them. But then I look at some of them and go, okay, when I quit my job, I couldn't service or anything. So I went out to regional areas and bought these little crappy burnt out properties for like 10, 20 grand. I would never want to do one of them today. Because the junk of, like, you know, the things that happen at the time, you know, like renovating a house that's getting destroyed as we're renovating it ain't a nice thing. But I made some very good money out of them. And that helped me push me to the next level. And then I started buying some small blocks of units. But then I look at the admin issues in some of them, and that's not as great. But then I was able to push myself onto, you know, shopping centres or motels or whatever. They've had their own little sets of dramas. But, you know, I've got one property I bought for 460 grand. I signed up a 20-year lease on it for $90,000 a year as a first year, and it goes up by 3% CPI with the international, like one of the global companies out there. And it rents out for 25% yield, paid rent in advance every single year.
That's a commercial property, obviously, is it?
Yeah. Commercial properties are high risk. I don't suggest people buy commercial properties, but the opportunity, and it fit in line with my strategy at the time. And you know, go to get a loan for a commercial property. If your commercial property is vacant for 5 years, it'll kill someone. They'll be bankrupt, you know. So it comes with a high level of risk. You know, buying blocks of land, building on them, land banking. Each single time, you know, I've learned something from them. They've pushed me on. I saw my original first house that I ever bought, and I did that for a reason, and that was to prove to people that I'm not emotionally attached to my property investing. Emotion gets you killed. You need to treat your property investing like a business and make logical and educated decisions. I sold that property, used the profits from it, and I bought my first principal place of residence just for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with it, I'm not in the game of I don't like buying properties to sell them. I buy them to hold and rent them out. I think coming into the future, I'm going to be lightening my cargo and ditching a few properties, not specifically for any specific reason, just from an admin side. When you get a letterbox full of mail every single day, it does kill your life.
I was going to ask you, you must have an army of people that assist with just some of that management of the portfolio. I've got no doubt it's hard enough managing a handful over here.
That's why I set up the Blink Property Group, because that's my asset management firm. I've got my best property managers in the areas where I buy most of my properties, and, you know, built systems and procedures around them to provide, you know, the best sort of property management in Sydney and Queensland. Yep. But, it's a continual growth and expanding consolidation phase, but each of the properties, you know, I've had some real pearls of deals over the years. I've made lots of money from my property investing. I've, you know, got some very, very good assets there, but they all sort of deliver. You know, if you wanted to, if you're in Melbourne today and you want to get to Queensland, right, you've got a few different options. You'd firstly, to identify where you are. You're not at the airport. You might be in suburbia, and you want to get to SeaWorld on the Gold Coast. For you to get there, you first need to identify where you are, where you want to be, and what's the best route to get there. You could catch on a plane, but a plane ain't going to land at your door. You're going to need to catch an Uber, a train, a taxi, catch a bus, whatever the case might be. Get to the airport, catch the plane, but there might be a different alternative route. You might be able to drive. You might be able to catch a bus. You might be able to go on a plane, on a train.
Yep.
So there's different vehicles. But even if you took the most direct route, you will need a different vehicle at different stages of your investing journey. So some of the vehicles that I've driven to get me to where I am today, they've played their part, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good. So, Nathan, wow. I mean, for the audience out there, if you didn't know Nathan Birch, you certainly know him now. I think we've jam-packed a lot into this discussion that's been excellent. So, Nathan, thanks so much for your time. Are there any final words that you'd like to share with the audience before we part ways?
A few things. Buy below market value. Have a good upside for growth. Have a good cash flow. Most importantly, don't add emotion to your investing. Make sure you have a plan. Without having a strong plan, exactly knowing how you're going to get from where you are today to where you want to be in the future, without having that drawn out, you don't need to have it drawn out on a whiteboard and pens and paper and all that sort of stuff, but without having clarity of where you're heading, you know, you're in for recipe for disaster. So work out what the goal is, then work out the strategy, and work out what you've got to do for it. And then on the final note, just keep hustling.
I love it. They're definitely my big takeaways, having a plan. And in all honesty, all the people that we talk to on a day-to-day basis, probably the single most common mistake that we see investors making, and often, you know, which relates to problems that we start solving, is people that acted too hastily without having a plan. It is absolutely vital. Nathan's definitely helped clarify why. Such an exciting journey and story that he's just shared with us today. And Nathan, hopefully we can do it again sometime. Thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Anytime. You have a good afternoon.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Nathan. Cheers. Bye.
Pleasure, mate.